The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Everyone, and welcome to episode 401 of the Battery Power Podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, and it's Sunday, May 28th. It's almost Memorial Day, and I am joined by the fearless leader, managing editor Chris Willis is here. Hello, sir. How are you?
Hey, Brad. How are you, man?
I'm living the dream. We upgraded on Scott tonight. That's good to see. Scott is still gallivanting around some international location, and I'm trying to fill his shoes. And, look, you always offer to be on the podcast, but you're so busy. I try not to bug you too much, but it's time. Here we are.
Yeah, and I missed earlier this week. Forced Steven to do a solo show, so I'm glad to jump on here with you.
It was fun to listen to Steven. It was old school. I really enjoyed it. He seemed to be a natural in the hosting solo realm, but it's hard. People do not appreciate that it's not comfortable to talk to yourself for 35 minutes about anything. I do it all the time in basketball. I've gotten, I guess, maybe a little bit better at it, but it's really terrifying. So shout out to Steven for that. And I know Sean does it all the time too, and Sean is amazing at it. So there you go. We'll get into a lot of stuff on this podcast. It's a little bit odd because the Braves played a night game on Sunday and then they also play tomorrow. So not going to be the same lag time that we sometimes get in between the Sunday game and the next time they play, but they had an overall losing week. That's never great. 3-4. They did win today, which makes the podcast a little bit better usually to talk about them, but still only 7-10 the last 17. They're still in a pretty good spot. Before we dive into like kind of what transpired, I'll assume based on, you know, I know you see the crazy mentions and things, the mood's probably better than it was yesterday, because the mood on Saturday, at least that I saw on Twitter and other places, was not great.
No, it's kind of been that way this whole month. I mean, you know, they admittedly haven't played their best baseball, but the schedule's had a lot to do with that. The injuries have had a lot to do with that. And you're right. I have to kind of remind everybody, you know, they're still 11 games above 500 and have a semi-comfortable lead in NL East. And I think when Max Fried went down and Kyle Wright went down, if we had said, you know, this is where they would be at nearing Memorial Day, I think we all would have taken that.
Oh, yes. I mean, absolutely. And it's kind of ironic. I look at it just now just to make sure I wasn't crazy. But yeah, they have the best record in the National League right now on Memorial Day. And given the tenor of things, you may not know that, you may not recognize it if you just kind of parachuted in one day and just let's see how Braves Twitter is doing. But hey, you know, it has been perfect. Like you said, again, they're 7-10 the last 17. They're not playing at their absolute best. They are banged up, but a little bit of the sky is falling stuff is, I guess it's warranted. It's expected because it's just what happens over the course of the season, but it is not so bad. We'll get into kind of why later on. And the other big story that we'll touch on a lot more later in the show is the return of Mike Soroka. As we're recording this podcast, the Braves have not yet, and we hope they will, we think they probably will while we record, they have not yet confirmed full on that he's going to pitch on Monday, but basically everyone agrees he's going to pitch on Monday in Oakland. I know you've been around the team this week. I'll go through kind of the TikTok later on, but it's been more than 1,000 days since he pitched in the majors. So fingers crossed, and we'll hit it at the end of the podcast, but that's a big story too.
Oh yeah, that's huge. And, you know, because I mean, there's probably been several points throughout this process that we wondered if this day would ever come. You know, I think it's almost probably a good thing that they're going to let him open on the road. But, you know, like you said, we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show.
Yeah, definitely. But, you know, first, and with a hat tip to Sean and Steven, we'll kind of fly through the Dodgers series. It's been covered a little bit, and we have a little bit less time than usual because it's later on a Sunday than often. But they did lose 2 of 3 to the Dodgers this week. They actually led 4-0 in the opener. I think, were you at all these games? You were definitely at multiple of these games. Did you go to all 3 of these?
I was at the opener and the Wednesday walk-off win. I missed the Tuesday game.
Okay, well, there you go. That's Tuesday was the one to miss, so congratulations to you on that. So the opener, they had a lead, at Rosario homers, and then they blew the lead in the 5th inning. Morton wasn't particularly good in that game. It was one of those, you know, kind of everything goes wrong after they took the lead, and then they got just absolutely smashed on Tuesday. Honestly, nothing went well. Even Strider, he wasn't fantastic. He was still good, and for anyone else in the world. But yeah, I mean, going into Wednesday and the fact that they were leading a lot of Wednesday's game, but it was kind of downtrodden. And I think that maybe that contributed to the overall mood because they were pretty close to being swept by the Dodgers.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and I think what people forget in that is just how good of a team the Dodgers really are. Yeah. And, you know, they kind of got off to a slow start, but they've been playing really good baseball over the last month or so. You know, so, I mean, I thought that, you know, I mean, anytime the Braves and the Dodgers play, it seems like the Dodgers have kind of gotten a little bit of the upper hand in the regular season. But, you know, the Braves, of course, won the NLCS in 2021. You know, they've performed a little better. But, it was a measuring stick between two of the best teams in the National League. You know, they'll play again out in Los Angeles later on. So, but it was one of those series where, you know, it did kind of feel like they got outplayed, even though, you know, really, and arguably they could have won 2 of the 3 games because they had that big lead in the opener.
Yeah, it was definitely a can't predict baseball kind of thing, because like you said, they could have won 2 or 3. They could have got swept, ended up getting 1. They get the Wednesday walk-off after leading most of the game. Bryce Elder, who we'll talk about later on as well, pitched very well on Wednesday. They got pretty unlucky in the 8th inning. I mean, you were there. The 2-run double that was hit off of Anderson in the 8th inning was about as unlucky as it gets. And that was like potentially the swing piece in the entire game. Unfortunately, it did not end up being that way, but that's one of those that's like genuinely unlucky. I mean, there's times where fans look and see and hope that stuff's unlucky against them. That was one that's like, I think, yeah, I had a 110 expected batting average. And for that to almost decide the game, it didn't, but man, that would have been brutal.
Yeah, it sure would have. And I mean, like you said, we know the bullpen's kind of struggled of late, but there's been a lot of bad luck involved in there too. Seems like, you know, I thought it was really big for them to come back and win that game, just because, man, if they had gotten swept, you know, just how much different things would have felt going into this Philly series. But, you know, they did end that series on a good note and was able to come back in the ninth.
Yeah, especially the fact that they were leading that whole game. If they had blown it and gotten swept, it would have been pretty brutal. But, you know, Riley, who came alive this week and really the last couple of weeks now, opens up the ninth with a double. And then, you know, Ozzy had this great plate appearance to generate that game-winning sac fly to kind of walk it off and improve the vibe considerably as the Phillies arrived. And, you know, Thursday's game against Philadelphia, we'll spend a little bit more time on the weekend because this just hasn't been covered as in depth on the podcast feed. But, you know, Dylan Dodd comes up to start. He wasn't fantastic. He pitched well enough to give them a chance. And then AJ Minter gave up 3 straight hits to tie the game in the 7th inning. I know Steven covered this on his solo show, talking about AJ, talking about a lot of what transpired there. But you know, they won the game. It's another one where they gave up a lead. It was tied, and they kind of blew it open from there. But you know, Dodd, it felt like they might stick with Dodd after that game, but we know now that they were not going to do that. They ended up sending him down after that performance. But what did you make of the way that Dodd looked, as far as, like, I know he's not going to be an option for this week, probably, at least it seems like it. But it's like, you know, did he impress you? Like, I think the numbers were just kind of middling, but he gave them a chance.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing with Dodd is just the stuff, you know, he just can't live in the middle of the plate, and it's too often. That's where he's leaving pitches at. You know, it seemed like in the spring, and I guess these are shorter outings, and maybe this is why, but the stuff was playing up a little bit more. I will say this. I do enjoy watching a young pitcher go out there and pound the strike zone instead of walking four or five guys. You know, but the thing was, when he did give up contact, man, it was hard. It was hard contact, and, you know, gave up a couple of homers, I think, in that one. One monstrous home run to Bryce Harper. So,
yeah,
you know, again, I like to see a guy attack the strike zone, but I think it's one of those things where Dodd's got to live on the edges. I think he could learn a lot by watching Bryce Elder. You know, I'm not ready to give up on him or anything, but I do think he probably needs more time, you know, at AAA, and then obviously they sent him back after that start.
Yeah, I think that if they didn't have Soroka getting, you know, close, and now we presume arriving, it would have been fine to go with Dodd again. Like, I think he can give you a chance like he did in that game, and that's kind of all you can ask for given all the injuries that they have. The offense was good on Thursday. That was their second best game of the week offensively, always the best one before tonight's game on Sunday. Riley hit two home runs. And he's definitely coming alive. I didn't pull the numbers today while we're talking, but he became the third player since StatCast started tracking in the entire league, which is, like, I think, you know, almost 10 years ago now, to have two homers of at least 455 feet in the same game. He had been brutal kind of before this. He had this sub 550 OPS over, like, almost a month, but then he kind of came alive in a big way. He had this 8-game stretch where he had 7 extra base hits, and he was really raking, and obviously he's seeing the ball much better now. You know, beyond just the obvious numbers, does it look like he's kind of himself again? Because that would obviously be a nice boon for a team that kind of needs him to be.
Yeah, he talked about it a little bit throughout the week too, and you know, I think we kind of saw it in the series before the Dodgers. He started to hit the ball a little bit with more authority. Didn't get a lot of success from it. I mean, hit it right at people, but you started to see that the quality of the plate appearances was getting better. You know, it was, you could tell it was a load off him too, because he was really smiling after that 2 home run game, obviously. So, and I mean, that was against Aaron Nola too, who he's pretty much torn up in his career. So, you know, while that was, you know, while he's had some success against Nola, just to see him, you know, hit the ball with authority like that, because, you know, I think I was looking at May, I think, you know, he had a, you know, he just, I think at one point he only had, coming into the week, he might have only had 2 extra base hits the whole month, you know. Yeah. And that's not him. And but I think he kind of got looking more like himself in this series.
Yeah, and I mean, much has been made of, like, you know, if you go back to the end of last year, we talked about it on the show and got yelled at a lot a few weeks ago with Scott and I, and then I think it became almost too big of a talking point. You know, he's been pretty mortal for, you know, 500 almost plate appearances, but I think that he had proven enough before that to where people shouldn't be worried. It just was a notable thing, and he looks like himself again. And you know, it's a good, encouraging sort of factor. The numbers for this year still, they don't like blow you away, but he's now up to like 115 WRC plus. He looks fine again, and that was notable because, of course, that was the biggest game that he had this week, was on Thursday. Friday was kind of the night that the bullpen chatter peaked. We'll get to that in a second. Jared Schuster pitched. He was okay. Left having allowed 2 runs, but the bullpen let him down a little bit. Before we get to how they perform, I know Steven pre-tweeted about this before it happened, so I know where he fell on this. What did you make of Snit pulling Schuster when he did? Because that became a huge point of contention.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things where, you know, you don't want to let the, I guess you're trying to pay attention and not let the guy see the lineup for a third time quite as much. You know, I think it's a fine line. If it works, when it works, everybody's happy. And when it doesn't and the bullpen gives it up, then, you know, you're kind of looking at it like, you know, what'd you take him out for? But, you know, it's, I think it's just, it's just compounded by the struggles of the bullpen of late. You know, it's just, it's one of those things. Everybody's kind of already on edge. So it was, you know, people were ready, and when it happened, you know, that's, there you go.
Yeah. I mean, I, you know, people that listen to the podcast regularly probably know how I feel. I agree with Steven. I thought that it was totally the right move. It didn't work. But process over results is kind of the way I think about things. I do understand, though, especially traditionally, you know, people that don't love to kind of be proactive on this kind of thing. And Schuster wasn't dominating, but he was pitching fine. And I think that, you know, it was going to be Realmuto for the third time. And that's probably why he did it. It was a right-handed, you know, great right-handed hitter, et cetera. Jimenez was really bad when he came in, and that sort of magnified things. And I wrote in the notes, I think it was kind of the collective, like, bullpen freakout night. At the end of the night, the Braves were 17th in the league in bullpen ERA, which isn't horrific, obviously. As of this moment, they're 15th in the league. But that's, you know, smack dab in the middle. And for a team that was supposed to be awesome in the bullpen, that's not where you want to be. And it has at times, like, it's felt worse than that. This does not include the last, I think, game or two, but they had a 5+ ERA for about a, you know, 2-3 week span as well in recent days. So we all kind of know the attrition that's happened there. We all kind of know, like, kind of the blowups that have happened along the way. But I'll ask you this, because we haven't talked about this, at least not you and I. Is this just, like, noise, in your opinion? Or is there, like, real concern about the bullpen? Because that is different. Because, you know, some of the unluckiness, all that stuff. But if this is going to be a problem, a legitimate problem area, then that is obviously more of a question that could be maybe addressed by trade or whatever.
Yeah, I think it's really dependent on which reliever you're talking about. Because, like, with A.J. Minter, I mean, everybody's just focused on that ERA. But, you know, his FIP's actually pretty much in line with where it is, has been in his career. Now, I think he's not, you know, I think he's made some mistakes or whatever, but I think there's a lot of noise in his profile. I mean, coming into Sunday, the Braves had bullpen was third in FIP, 3.66, yep, even with that ERA down ranked 15th. So, you know, that kind of suggests that there is some noise, you know, just in this stretch of performances here. But I will say this, you know, it's one of those situations that, like, every time that bullpen door opens right now, you don't really feel good about anybody that's coming in. I guess maybe Iglesias of late, but, you know, he struggled his first couple of outings too. You know, he's kind of looked more like what we expect from him. But, you know, it's one of those situations where, you know, you can't really say, oh, you should have put this guy in, because they've all had their struggles. And, you know, I mean, I think it is something that we're going to see addressed down the road, but around the trade deadline, because, you know, they usually do add a reliever to the mix. But, I mean, it, you know, at this point, it's one of those things. I mean, they really miss Dylan Lee too, you know. Yeah. getting him back would be huge too. But, you know, it is something that I think you should be concerned with. But at the same time, I also think they've been unlucky in a lot of ways too.
Yeah, I think the way that I would put it is that it's concerning, but I'm not panicking. And I think we had a listener that was, I think, being good natured with us about it. I think tagged me and Scott in a tweet about kind of making fun of our bullpen preview episode, where we were pretty effusive about the bullpen. But even in that discussion, I know this has been a theme of the podcast since we started it, you know, 7+ years ago. Relievers are volatile. And, like, even a team that was as loaded on paper as the Braves were in the bullpen, it's never going to be just a breeze. Sometimes it is, you know, it is what it is, but, like, you can't project year to year relievers. I mean, Minter is perhaps the most shining example of that. I mean, you brought him up, so did Steven, and the numbers are stark there. But, you know, all relievers, I mean, with very, very few exceptions, are subject to noise and subject to not being very good or getting hurt or all those things. Like, you cannot have the same level of confidence projecting your bullpen as you can other stuff. And we've kind of seen that already. I think it's a unit that's gotten a little bit too much heat, and I get why. It's the reactionary. It's nothing more frustrating for a baseball fan than when their team's bullpen blows games. It's just, like, one of those, like, things that just are built to trigger people's brains. But I do think that big picture, trying to be level-headed about it, it's not an area that I'm panicking about. I just think it's a little bit more concerning than you want to be.
Yeah, I agree. And it's also magnified because, you know, you look in the rotations down two of key starters. Yeah. and your number, arguably your number one, depending on how you slot in Fried and Strider. But it is a concern, and those struggles, you know, kind of get magnified just because you're having to run a bullpen game, or, you know, you're having to go to the bullpen a little earlier because you've got rookie starters in the rotation. So you know, it is something I think it'll get better as we go along, but I believe they'll be adding people.
Yeah, they will do something. I'm very sure about that. It's something that Alex will address. And even when they haven't needed it, quote unquote, they've still done it. So they're going to be pretty active, I would imagine, in the next couple, you know, and I won't say it's going to be soon because that's something, a question we got actually, I can't remember who asked it, so my apologies, but it was like, is it too early to look at trades? And probably is the answer to that. I mean, it's not impossible to get trades done in late May, but it's probably a little bit early for it. We'll see if they get a little bit closer to, you know, mid-June or later for that to actually come to fruition. The other big thing that I want to make sure we touched on Friday is the work of Marcell Ozuna. Now, we've all talked about Marcell. It's kind of well-documented, but if you've been under a rock, it's been a roller coaster ride for Ozuna, but he has been really good in recent days. He wasn't great tonight in particular, but he's up to a 114 WRC plus for the season. And this is a crazy swing. So in April, he had a 10 WRC plus for the month. And in the first 19 games of May, so three plus weeks, he had a 221 WRC plus. He was the fourth worst player in all of baseball by Fangraphs WAR from the start of the 2021 season. So two full seasons through the end of April of this year. So two seasons plus a month, he was the fourth worst player in baseball. And then this month, he literally might be the National League Player of the Month. I'm not saying he's going to be, but he actually is in the running for that. It's one of the craziest things I've ever seen. I mean, I think we all kind of tried to leave the door open a little bit because of the Statcast profile was always good. He hits the ball hard, etc. But nobody saw this coming. The fact that he was just like literally Babe Ruth for 3.5 weeks is just wild.
Yeah, I mean, when Ozuna was so bad in April that I don't know that any of us thought that this type of turnaround was possible. But, I mean, he's been great, like you said. I mean, he's hitting the ball extremely hard again, getting results. You know, I thought it was pretty funny. Nick Green on the broadcast the other night was talking about him and said that a faulty pitching machine in Miami kind of led to his turnaround, because the ball wasn't coming out smooth and he was having to try to stay back to hit it. And that's what he credited kind of for getting him out of this funk, which I thought was hilarious. But, you know, I mean, to go from a 10 weighted runs created plus in April to 221 at this point, I mean, honestly, we thought he was about a week away from being, you know, DFA'd. Yeah. Because they had so many people coming back off the injured list, you know, and now obviously he's hitting fifth and is an everyday player again.
It really is wild. I don't know how real it is. I mean, it's I'm someone that likes to lean on sample sizes, and the fact that he was so bad for so long, it's kind of hard to believe this is real. But at the same time, the batted ball profile was always good, and he was, you know, I tweeted this week, he hit at an MVP level in 2020. Now, that's a long time ago, but it's not like it was impossible to believe he could be good again. So yeah, it's one of those things. Like, I totally agree with you. We were all really speculating on people that around the team were like, all right, when's this going to happen? Because it almost felt like it was a fait accompli that he was not going to be on the team at some point. And now he's like clearly going to be entrenched. And yeah, if he keeps hitting like this, they're going to roll with him, and as they should. So there you go. So from there, Saturday's game was a low point. The offense had its worst night in a while. They just couldn't touch Zach Wheeler, and Zach Wheeler is awesome. So that's worth emphasizing. They had three hits and a walk, struck out 12 times against Wheeler, didn't score a run. Sean Murphy did homer off Craig Kimbrell, old pal, in the ninth, but it wasn't quite enough there. I saw people like, I'm not sure you saw this too, but people were like picking on Morton and the pitching on this night. And I was like, guys, they lost this game 2-1. Like, the run prevention was not the issue on Saturday. They just couldn't touch Zach Wheeler, which again is defensible because it's Zach Wheeler, but it was a total power outage.
Yeah. And I mean, we've seen Wheeler have these kind of performances against the Braves in the past too. So, I mean, it wasn't like something we've never seen, you know. Held him, I mean, basically three hits. I think Wheeler only gave up two of them. One was to Kimbrell, Murphy homer off Kimbrell in the ninth. So, you know, just a dominating performance by him. You just kind of have to tip your cap, to quote Freddie Gonzalez, and just go on, you know. I thought Morton wasn't, you know, Morton wasn't the greatest, his best that we've seen, but he was kind of this kind of version of Charlie Morton. A lot of strikeouts, a lot of base runners, but you know, he did his job and kind of kept them there. And then I thought, like you said, the bullpen was actually pretty good on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, that was the weirdest thing. It was like, that was the one night when the bullpen was what it was supposed to be like. It just didn't matter because they couldn't hit. But, you know, on the Morton point, you know, he's been the guy that they've kind of needed him to be this year. He's not been dominant. I think the days of Morton being an ace are maybe gone. He's 39 years old, but he has an ERA of 3.59 right now in 10 starts. And if you just offered me that in March, I would have said that's a positive result for the Braves. So he's been fine. And Minter looked good in that game, etc. Tonight's game, the bullpen wasn't perfect. You know, Colin McHugh, who I've always liked, was not very good tonight. But the offense was the story. Let's just end on a positive note when it comes to results. They scored 7 runs in the first inning tonight. It was aided by 2 errors, but the Braves had 17 hits in the first 6 innings. That doesn't usually happen in baseball games.
No, and it's been a long time, you know, since we've kind of seen it from the offense like this. So it was, you know, on one note, you don't want to waste all of them. It seems like they all come in one game and then you can't hit anything, you know, for the next 2 or 3 days. But I felt like they were coming. They were going to explode on somebody here pretty soon. And, you know, obviously that happened. It happened tonight on the Phillies.
Yeah, everyone in the lineup had at least a hit. I believe, yes, 7 of the 9 guys who started had multiple hits. Ronnie and Olsen were the stars, but Riley was really good too. You know, Olsen hit the 2 absolute titanic home runs. Ronnie opened 4 for 4 and has been, you know, basically the MVP of the league so far. He's been ridiculous. Sean Murphy's been awesome. He had 3 hits tonight. Yeah, it was a team effort. It was collective. And that's before you even get to Michael Harris. Did you see the Otis Nixon comparisons? Because I saw them. They were out there.
Oh, I didn't see them, but now that you – I see it on this rundown right here, and you kind of think about it, man. It was that type of a catch. So it was fun. I mean, that was a good game. I think the Braves Twitter actually needed a game like this, you know. So it was good to see.
Yeah, it's a good reminder that Michael Harris, even when he's not hitting, can do things that help you, which was play defense like that in center field, a premium position, and also Strider. I mean, we don't have to do the whole Strider thing because we all know how good he is, but he became, this is according to Bowman, the fastest starting pitcher to 100 strikeouts in a season in over 100 years. That speaks for itself. His numbers are always, you know, video game like, but he had 9 Ks tonight. He had 1 mistake. It was a 2-run homer, but other than that, he was just awesome. And like, they didn't really need him to be that good tonight, but he was his normal dominant self.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what I think at this point, you know, everything, we say the same things about him every week. I mean, he's just amazing to watch. you know, just real, just quiet, methodical, goes out there and dominates hitters, you know, and gives you 6, 5, 6 good solid innings every night with nearly double figure strikeouts. I mean, the strikeout numbers he's putting up are just absurd. I think it was 100 Ks in 61 innings. And I believe that was 2/3 of an inning better than Jacob DeGrom. Which, I mean, basically that's the category Strider's in now, except, you know, he's healthy and making starts every week. But think back to Jacob DeGrom a couple of seasons ago, and that's, you know, that's essentially what the what he's given the Braves.
Yeah, I mean, he's ridiculous. And, you know, we all know this, but they need him to be this good right now. And that's in some ways unfair to a guy who is still really young and, you know, but the margin for error without Fried and Wright is pretty thin, and he has to be great. And he was great again tonight. And you'll take it each and every day of the week. While we were talking, Michael Soroka is confirmed to be the starting pitcher on Monday in Oakland. We knew this already, but as we look ahead a little bit to what's going to come this week, it is his first major league appearance since August 3rd of 2020. So almost 3 years, more than 1,000 days. The timeline basically was a little bit weird. Like, they optioned Dodd, and when they scratched Mike Soroka today is when I was like, okay, it's happening. And then I'm sure you saw the Anthopoulos radio appearance where he kind of gave it away too. But what's your mind been sort of saying and sort of observing throughout the day all the way up until now, where he's now confirmed to be a starter tomorrow?
Well, I mean, when they optioned Dodd, you know, he started kind of looking at things, and I mean, honestly, they weren't going to have, you know, in many options. It was Soroka or a bullpen game essentially, because Schuster's already up, and you know, Dodd can't come back up unless there's an injury. So you know, you was kind of looking at it. I thought about a situation maybe where they gave him one more start at Gwinnett, and I think, you know, if everybody was healthy, he'd probably get another start or two, even, you know, at Gwinnett, but everybody's not healthy. And this is a perfect, almost a perfect opportunity. I know a lot of people wanted to see him return at home, but I think there's some benefit, honestly, to let him get his first start out in Oakland and on the road. And then, you know, he'll probably stick in the rotation, I imagine, and we'll be back at home soon enough.
Yeah, I mean, it's, we'll get into the A's in a second in general, but I am on your side of this. I think it might be good, given all of the emotions that I'm sure will be happening in his brain. You know, it's been so long, so many obstacles. It's a fantastic story. I mean, for a guy who was, you know, this budding star that had all this injury stuff and all these false starts and things, and have him come back. And honestly, it's about as low pressure of an environment as you can get as a major league starter, to be pitching in Oakland against literally the worst team in the league, not in front of your home fans. It probably is a good situation. Yeah, it'd be fun. The moment would be incredible when he pitched in Atlanta, and it still will be whenever he pitches in Atlanta. I'm very confident about that. But I think they almost couldn't have scripted this any better, to be honest. As long as he's ready to go, and he threw nine six pitches on Tuesday, he, by all accounts, looked pretty good. The last two starts has been really good by the numbers. You know, I know, I'm sure, like, you've seen him pitch, and people have kind of been a little bit skeptical of how he's looked at times in Gwinnett, but he seems to be rounding in closer to form at this point in time. And yeah, I mean, it'll be emotional. I mean, I think of our guy Eric Cole, who's been the Soroka guy forever. I'm sure he's throwing a party this evening. But, like, you know, Braves fans are invested in this, and they should be. I mean, I'm not always the biggest softy on this stuff, but, like, it's going to be very, very cool when he pitches. Like, almost 3 years. I mean, unprecedented stuff too. Like, the Achilles, it's crazy. So I've said a lot of things there, but it's going to be awesome. I look forward to it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, not just one Achilles injury, but two.
It's
unprecedented. And, you know, credit him, credit the Braves for, you know, sticking with him for this long, all the work and stuff that he's put in. You know, it's going to be a surreal moment. I hope everybody's kind of got their expectations in check. I mean, I would love for him to come out and pick right back up where he left off in 2020, but, you know, that's not really realistic. I thought Snit didn't just come out and say it the other day when he was talking about Soroka, but, you know, he wanted him, you know, he needs to be able to throw 100 pitches, or, you know, in that area was kind of what Snicker said. And I think that's what you're looking at here, is you just want Soroka to come in and give you innings at this point, you know, for a rotation that's kind of been battered a little bit. So, you know, I think getting him back, I think it'll hype everybody up, and, you know, hopefully it goes well. And I think the most important thing is just he's able to stay healthy. You know, pitching every fourth, fifth day.
Right. I mean, and it's, you know, his presence on Monday allows them to give Bryce Elder an extra day when he's been, you know, he's been pitching extremely well for the Braves. He's been, you know, when he left the game on the other night, he was leading the league in ERA, which is just absolutely wild. So he has an extra day off. That probably helps everybody involved. Everyone seems to love Michael Soroka, and I'm not just fans. I'm talking about, you know, people in the organization. I'm sure you hear that stuff down there, covering the team on the scene. But yeah, it'll be emotional for everybody. That'll be awesome. You know, again, Elder gets to go on Tuesday. Now he, again, 2.01 ERA for Elder. It's kind of been almost like a meme from Braves fans the last couple of days about the Statcast metrics and how, like, it seems impossible to do what he is doing. But the slider has been a talking point, and it should be. He's been basically unhittable with the slider, and that can do a lot of things for you. We've all kind of done the Elder thing by now, but because, again, he was leading the league in ERA when he exited his last start, I have to ask you, like, what is going on with Bryce Elder? It's incredible, honestly. I mean, my tendency, I'm sure, is to be skeptical, and I am a little bit, but I do want to just stay. Like, it almost doesn't matter. Like, the fact that they've gotten this production out of him has been enormous.
Yeah, I mean, I got asked, somebody tweeted at me about a week ago and asked me about this very question, and I was like, just enjoy it while it lasts, you know, because I don't think he, you know, he can obviously keep this up, but I mean, just how big has he been? I mean, the guy, you know, people forget, but I mean, he was dropped in spring training at the same time Ian Anderson was.
Yep.
And because he just, you know, he wasn't pitching terrible, but he wasn't, you know, it didn't look the way they wanted him to look, and Dodd and Schuster had looked better at that point. I mean, he was opening day starter at Gwinnett, and then he came up, and I mean, he's pretty much been a fixture in this rotation you know, from the start to finish. And, you know, I kind of look at it the way Kyle Wright was last year a little bit. You know, I think everybody was hoping that Kyle Wright would, you know, take a rotation spot. And, you know, I think everybody this year was hoping that Elder would be able to do that. And, I mean, he's come in and exceeded any expectation that anybody could have had for him. You know, I wish I knew how he was doing it. I know there's a lot of spin, you know, with those pitches, the stuff's not overwhelming by any means. He does a good job living on the edges, but it does seem, you know, about once or twice a game, he will miss middle and nobody can hit it, you know, and I don't really have a good explanation for it other than, you know, he's just gotten guys so off balance that, you know, they're just having a terribly hard time, squaring anything up.
Right. And look, he actually sometimes some guys, and this is it gets attributed too much, but there are some guys who manage to outperform their metrics year after year. These guys do exist. I do think that it's going to regress a little bit, but maybe he's just one of these guys that he breaks the system and it is what it is. And but again, without Fried and without Wright and all the weirdness with the rotation, just even getting this much out of him so far has been awesome. And they can rely on him to pitch every 4 or 5 days. And that's a huge thing, too. We should at least mention, I know I said it a little bit earlier, but the A's are genuinely historically awful. They're the worst team in the league by a lot. They have I'm going to ask you not to cheat, Chris. And if you've already seen this, you can tell me. Do you happen to know what their run differential is right now?
It was over 170, I believe.
It is minus 199.
Okay.
In 55 games. So yeah. That means they are getting outscored by almost 4 runs a game. That is unbelievably bad. They've lost 11 games in a row. They are 10-45. They're 6.5 games worse than everybody else in the league. They've allowed the most runs in the league by almost 100. They actually have scored more runs than Cleveland, which is shouts to Cleveland, I guess. but anyway, I don't mean to say that, you know, I say that now because of the fact that it's baseball and yeah, they're really awful, but people, you know, they might win a game or two. It's just one of those things. Like baseball, my guard is up on this series because on paper, the Braves should dominate them. The Braves, at the very moment, are third in the league run differential, and the A's are dead last. That is about as easy as it gets. But it's in Oakland. You know, can't predict baseball, but man, they're really bad. It has to be said.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking at this today, and I think they're 5-23 at home and 5-22 on the road, which is you know, an incredible amount of consistency. You know, it's just a bad situation. Obviously, you know, the franchise, the whole Las Vegas thing's hanging over them like a cloud. But you've got a terribly young roster who signed a couple of veterans, and they haven't really done much either. You know, it's just the pitching's atrocious. I was looking, they're dead last in ERA, dead last in FIP, dead last in F-WAR, and that's their entire pitching staff. The rotation's been terrible. The bullpen's been terrible. Kyle Muller was their opening day starter. He was demoted earlier this week and has an ERA over 8. So, you know, it's one of those things, but I agree with you. In fact, I said this in Slack the other day. I was hoping the Braves would take 3 out of 4 from Philly. They go to Oakland with a chance to, you know, really pad that record a little bit. But then at the same time, Oakland's lost 11 in a row. And, you know, that's not going to last. Everything we know about baseball is that's not going to last forever.
No, and I could do Oakland stats all day long, and I won't do that. They are currently on pace for 29 wins on the season. For reference, the record holder for fewest wins in the current scheduling atmosphere is 43 wins. So they are currently the worst team in history by a lot. I'm not sure they're that bad because it's almost impossible to be this bad. But yeah, it's remarkable.
And yeah, I was going to add too, you know, and there's so much, you know, there's so much history with the Braves in them now because of those two big trades over the last two off seasons.
Sean Murphy returns, baby.
Yeah, Sean Murphy, homecoming for Sean Murphy and Matt Olson. You know, really all the pieces that they've got, you know, Shea Langeliers is their catcher. He's been kind of slumping of late. Esturi Ruiz came from the Brewers in the Sean Murphy trade. He's leading the majors in stolen bases. But I think he's in a 1-for-17 slump, didn't play Sunday. But, you know, he is playing every day. Everybody else is either injured or in the minors. And, you know, that's kind of a bleak situation when you trade the caliber of guys that they've traded over last. I mean, I looked at one point during this season, you know, Sean Murphy was leading the league in F4. Matt Chapman was second, and Matt Olson was like fourth or fifth. And, you know, that's got to be really, really sad if you're an Oakland fan.
Yeah, I feel genuinely bad for Ace fans at this moment in time. But that's the situation for the first series. They do have Thursday off, and they go to Arizona for a much more difficult series. The D-backs are 30-23 and playing quite well this year. A couple late night games Friday and Saturday. It's a 9:40 and a 10:10. So I don't know if Scott is back in the country by then, Chris. But if not, I pray for you on this.
I think he's still out. So we've got to cover a rare West Coast series. But you know, Scott takes care of us so much that we'll let him off this one time.
Come on, Scott. No, I'm kidding. But that's more of a challenge, obviously. I'm not going to jinx it. But if things were to hold and Soroka can pitch 4 days later than after his first start, he would be in line to maybe face Zach Gallen on Sunday. That would be fun. Zach Gallen is the Cy Young frontrunner at this point, along with Strider, I would say.
Yeah, that would be fun. And it will be interesting to see how they handle the rotation after Soroka starts. But, you know, the impression I got was that, you know, they didn't want to yo-yo Soroka. You know, kind of when he comes up, I expect him to get, you know, 4, 5, 6 starts, hopefully stay there the rest of the season. But, you know, I think they're going to give him ample time before, you know, before they would consider sending him down. I mean, I think he'd have to struggle, incredibly struggle to get sent out pretty quick.
Yeah, I agree. Just to make sure I wasn't crazy, I looked this up just now. Strider and Gallen are basically exactly co-favorites in the betting market for Cy Young right now in the National League. So you may not know Zach Gallen's work that well if you're a Braves fan, but he is very, very good, and the Braves will see him. At least he's in line to pitch on Sunday in the finale of that series. But that's one where getting a series win in Arizona would be really nice. Not that they can't do it or that they wouldn't be maybe probably favored to do it, but you can't assume anything out of that series. I think it'd be surprising everyone if they had a lot of trouble in Oakland, although it could happen. But Arizona is a legitimately good team, and that's a road series, some serious challenges there.
Yeah, and I mean, the Diamondbacks are not that far behind the Dodgers and really pushing it, and Gallen's been a huge part of that. I was thinking today on the broadcast when they were talking about Gallen being the front runner for the Cy Young and Strider right behind him. You might know this. When was the last time that one team had the MVP and the Cy Young? Because I think the Braves have an outside shot at it. You know, obviously it's early, but we're getting close to Memorial Day. Memorial Day's tomorrow. So, you know, with Acuna and Strider, you know, I think it's in play.
I don't know the answer, but I'm trying to look it up as we're talking. It looks like the last time it happened was the Tigers in 2013. Can you guess the winners?
Cabrera and Verlander.
It was Cabrera and Scherzer, which I have forgotten. Wow. He won a Cy Young with Detroit, but that happened. So yeah, 2013, that's 10 years ago. I guess it's probably due for one of those to happen again. Before that, it was the Twins in 06 with Justin Morneau and Johan Santana. Last NL team to do it was the 2005 Cardinals with Pujols and Chris Carpenter. So,
oh, wow. Okay.
It's been a while. It does not happen very often. So that's, yeah, it's definitely plausible. I think, you know, I was on that same page. I just found the odds for Cy Young. You can see the MVP odds, and Ronnie is the favorite in that particular category by a pretty decent margin, honestly. In fact, old pal Freddie Freeman is number two, and he is way behind Ronnie in the odds. It's still very early, but that's interesting to see.
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, Freeman is playing out of his mind, but I think Acuña is just on another level. I mean, to me, you know, he even looks probably better than he did in 2021. I know he's not really run off that tear of home runs yet. But, you know, when you look at the total package of what he's doing, I mean, he's just setting the table for this offense day in and day out. And I mean, you know, I think he was hitting .315 coming into the night and had four hits. So just an unbelievable start for him.
Yeah, and before we get out of here, that reminded me, the Freddie thing reminded me to do a little mini rant here. Have you seen the people that are mad about Matt Olson right now, or for whatever reason? Because they've been out there. I'm sure they've been in your mentions too. Matt Olson currently has a 139 WRC plus this season, and people think he's bad for some reason. Batting average, I guess.
Yeah, batting average, strikeout rate, but I mean, other than that, I mean, Olson's fine, and
he's very good at baseball.
He's very, very good, and the Braves signed him for a lot less than anybody could have dreamed that they were going to get him for. And I think when you look at the total package, he's going to be fine. I wish they'd shore up the defense a little bit. I think some of that's bad luck too. But at the same time, you know, there's nothing wrong. I mean, there's Freddie Freeman's an all-time great. Matt Olson's a all-star caliber, you know, MVP caliber on his very best day. I think he's better than what he's shown. Honestly, I think he'll cut down the strikeouts, but I mean, he's been fine. He's been really good, like you said, and showed it again tonight with two monstrous home runs. You know, I know he had a little bit of a stretch there where he wasn't playing real good and the strikeouts really piled up, but he hadn't got as much talk as Austin Riley has, but I think Olson's been kind of coming out of it though over the last week or so too.
Yeah, so no worries there. I wanted to just poke fun at batting average because it's okay. Matt Olson's pretty good. Not to worry, folks. Okay, Chris, I've taken a lot of your time. It's late on Sunday evening. I appreciate you staying up to do this. We got the Soroka news, so your job here is done. That's congratulations to you on that. This is an opportunity. We always do this anyway, whether you're here or not, but because you are literally the person who runs the site, it is time to plug all of what's happening at Battery Power. So I will turn it over to you. What should people be looking for? What's going on in the Battery Power universe?
We're trying to stay busy right now. Obviously, you know, the draft and stuff, it will be coming up, right around the corner, trade deadline. But, you know, we still got a ways to go there. West Coast trip, I know that's rough on everybody. If you can't stay up and watch, be sure to check the site out because we'll have write-ups for every game, every night, and any news that comes out of them. So, you know, it's just we're kind of hitting on all cylinders right now. The podcast network's going good. Appreciate all the work you and Scott and Sean, Steven do. And, we're just enjoying this season. It's a whole lot better. You know, I've had a whole lot more fun this season than I did last year at this point.
Early in the year, for sure. Yeah,
yeah, no doubt.
Absolutely right. It was a struggle in April and May a year ago, but we are rocking and rolling. We encourage you to not only read the site, which you definitely should be doing at batterypower.com, but also to subscribe to this podcast network. Anywhere you get your podcasts, it is free. That's always nice, but leave a 5-star rating if you enjoy the programs that are on this feed. We have 3 shows for the price of $0. Again, it's this podcast, which is usually myself and Scott, but with rotations when it's necessary. We have Chris's podcast with Steven, which is the podcast we name later. And we also have Sean hosting the Daily Hammer, doing a great job on that 3-5 times a week as well, in more bite-sized fashion. So we definitely encourage you to check out the show. And if you made it this far, thanks for listening. Chris, thank you for being here. And with all that said, I hope everybody enjoys their Memorial Day and a big week of baseball ahead. So stay tuned. We'll see you all next time.